I want you to turn over, actually, to the book of Esther. Let's turn over to the book of Esther. We're just going to start in chapter 1 of Esther. Esther chapter 1. Now, I've got about 40 minutes here to go through the entire book of Esther from chapter 1 all the way to the very end. So, we're going to cover a lot of ground. Philip says, 40 minutes, you can cover that in half that time. We're gonna hit the highlights here of the book of Esther. Philip doesn't believe I can get this done in 40 minutes. I can tell by the look on his face. This is actually something. Whenever Kirksville, the church there at Kirksville, had us come up, this is a message that I preached up there for them that Sunday afternoon. But there's a phrase. And although we're going to kind of cover the whole book, there's one particular phrase in this whole book that I absolutely love and that we're going to concentrate on when we get to that point. But for now, and I'm not going to read the entire... When I said we're going to go through the entire book, I didn't mean we're going to read every single verse here. We're going to hit some highlights. But we kind of want to divide this out in a couple different categories. One is how it all began. Then we're going to talk about the saving of a king and the rejection of Haman. Point number three, we're going to talk about the trials of the Jews and Mordecai's reaction. And then we're going to talk about Haman's plans being thwarted. And then we're going to circle back and do a little bit of a recap. So we're going to be moving right along here. Esther chapter 1. We find here, we're going to read verse 1 just to kind of get the context of where we're at. It says, "Now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus," this is Ahasuerus, "which reigned from India even into Ethiopia over 127 provinces, that in those days when the king Ahasuerus sat on the throne of his kingdom, which was in Shushan the palace," and talks about in the third year of his reign, "he made a feast unto all his princes and his servants, the power of Persia and Media, the nobles and the princes of the provinces being before him." So you find here this king, he's throwing a great big party. He's pulling in all the great rulers. He's having this great feast and this great party. Now as we get down into verse, we'll start in verse 9. It says, "And also Vashti the queen made a feast for the women in the royal house which belonged to King Ahasuerus. And on the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded..." Mehaman, Bizath. I'll tell you what, he commanded his seven chamberlains here in verse 10 that served him. And in verse 11 it says, "to bring Vashti the queen before the king with the crown royal to show the people and the princes her beauty, for she was fair to look on." Verse 12, "But the queen Vashti refused to come to the king's at the king's commandment by his chamberlains. Therefore was the king very wroth, and his anger burned in him." So you find here the king is throwing this really great party. He's got this feast. He's got all these great rulers in. And you start to get this feeling pretty quick in this chapter that old King Ahasuerus, he ain't much of a guy. He's kind of a shady character. He's also not the brightest of people, it seems, as you get through the rest of this book. But he wants to have the queen brought before all the people because she was very beautiful, and he basically wanted to parade her in front of all of his subjects and all of his rulers that he had with him. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't think I'd want to be married to somebody like that. Obviously, he doesn't have a lot of deep personal feelings for this woman, at least maybe in the state that he's in right now. He's obviously only thinking about himself and his pride and his power. But you find here that the queen refused. She refused to obey his command, and obviously it made him very, very angry. Now you find, as you go down a little bit further, we'll start here in... I'll tell you what. Let's start in verse 16. It says, "And Memucan answered before the king and the princes, Vashti the queen hath not done wrong to the king only, but also to all the princes and to all the people that are in all the provinces of the king Ahasuerus. For this deed of the queen shall come abroad unto all women, so that they shall despise their husbands in their eyes when it shall be reported. The king Ahasuerus commanded Vashti the queen to be brought in before him, but she came not. Likewise shall all the ladies of Persia and Media say this day unto all the king's princes which have heard the deed of the queen. Thus shall there arise too much contempt and wrath. If it please the king, let there go a royal commandment from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, that it be not altered, that Vashti come no more before the king Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal estate unto another that is better than she. So you find here this counselor of the king. So you look at this, and you got this king that wanted to parade his wife in front of a whole bunch of other rulers. And when she said no, the counselor said, hey, that wasn't just an insult to you, king. That was an insult to us and the rest of us. Because now our wives are going to hear about it and they're going to go do the same thing. These guys are just winners, aren't they? I'm telling you. the attitude here is pretty pathetic. So the queen refuses to do this vile thing, and they're upset because now their wives aren't going to obey them like they should. So we're down here almost to the end of chapter 1. King Ahasuerus has already proved that he's a bright and shining guy. He's definitely the role model for everybody, right? No. And he's obviously surrounded himself with a whole bunch of winners as well. They've passed this commandment where they're going to kick the queen out. They're going to take all of her stuff and they're going to give it to somebody else. That's where we find ourselves there at the end of chapter 1. Now, if you turn over to chapter 2, we'll start in verse 1 here. It says, after these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus was appeased, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what was decreed against her. Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan the palace, to the house of the women, and to the custody of Hege, the king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their things for purification be given them. And let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti, and the thing pleased the king, and he said, do so. So you find here, the king gets all angry, he gets mad, he passes his command, he kicks Vashti out, and it's almost like, oh, wait a minute, now what? I don't have a queen. And his anger's appeased, and he remembers Vashti, and now his guys that are around him are saying, don't worry about it, we got a plan, we'll go get you another queen. And verse 5, it says, now in Shushan the palace there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jehoiakim, king of Judah, when Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. So basically, if I'm reading this right, you've got Mordecai. He has a cousin who he has adopted as his daughter. And he has brought her up. He's raised her as if it is his own daughter. Now it came to pass in verse 8, when the king's commandment, his decree was heard, and when many maidens were gathered together in Shushan the palace to the custody of Haggai, that Esther was brought also into the king's house to the custody of Haggai, keeper of the women. And the maiden pleased him, and she obtained kindness of him, and he speedily gave her things for purification, with such things as belonged to her, and seven maidens which were meet to be given her out of the king's house, and he preferred her and her maids into the best place of the house of women. So you find Esther is, how do you want to say this? She's herded up with all of the other women. This is not something that they had a choice in, I don't believe. the context here is that they sent out all of these messengers and they gathered all of these young women and they brought them to this place and they said, you're going to come and we're going to take you before the king. And you find right off the bat that Esther here is found in a position of the guy that's in charge really likes her and he shows a lot of kindness to her. He does a lot of favors. I think you get the kind of context as you read through this that he was really taking care of her. But let's go ahead and skip down for time's sake. Let's go ahead and skip down to verse 15. It says, Now when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Hebeal, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for his daughter, was come to go into the king, she required nothing but what Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the women, appointed. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all of them that looked upon her. So Esther was taken in unto King Ahasuerus, into his house royal, in the tenth month, which is in the month of Tebeth, in the seventh year of his reign. And the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight, more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. So you find here that when the young women were taken before the king, Esther was chosen as the replacement. Now, you think, wow, you take this young lady, she's Jewish descent, she's in a place of captivity. I mean, you got to remember, they weren't brought here willingly. Now, you know, obviously some time has went by and Mordecai has actually got a position here, so it's maybe not the type of captivity we would think of. But it's still, this is not their homeland. They are foreigners in this area. And you take her, she gets brought before the king, and in a short amount of time, she goes from being Mordecai's adopted daughter to being the queen of this area. You think, wow, that's pretty impressive. That's pretty cool. Well, she's now the queen in a pagan country for a king that kicked out the last one because she wouldn't parade herself in front of all of his fellow partiers. That's the position that Esther now finds herself in. That's not a great position to be in as a young lady that wants to serve the Lord. I don't know about you, but I think I'd be pretty nervous knowing what happened to the last queen. And you get the impression from the first chapter, they didn't make no secret about what they did to the first queen. It was supposed to be a public thing because they wanted it to be an example so that you wouldn't do that. And so that's the position that this young lady finds herself in. Now if we keep moving here, we're going to skip down here a couple of verses down to verse 21. In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth and sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen, and Esther certified the king, therefore, in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out, therefore they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. And then if you move over to verse 1 of chapter 3, and after these things did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agite, and advanced him, and had set his seat above all the princes that were with him. So you find here, quote-unquote, perchance, Mordecai, Esther's adopted father, hears about a conspiracy against the king. He turns it into Esther, who gets it before the right people. They uncover the conspiracy, and you'd expect in the next thing to find some great reward for Mordecai, right? But you don't. Instead, at the beginning of chapter 3, you find that Haman, talks about this guy Haman being promoted. And nothing else is really said about Mordecai at this point. In verse 2, In verse 2 it says, "And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Then the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said unto Mordecai, Why transgressest thou the king's commandment? Now it came to pass, when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman, to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath. And he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had showed him the people of Mordecai. Wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai." And if we stop here for just a second, you find that Mordecai will not bow to this man. And they keep trying to get him to, and he just won't do it, because that's not the right thing to do. He's not going to bow before man. And it comes out, I think, in the course of this, that the reason he won't do this is because he's a Jew and that they don't believe in that. And you find here that when they tell Haman about it, Haman actually scoffs or scorns the idea of doing something to just Mordecai, because it's not good enough to punish Mordecai. He now knows that there's those like Mordecai, and he now has a burning hatred for all of these people like Mordecai. It's not good enough to do something to Mordecai. He has to do something to Mordecai's people. He hates the Jews at this point. So you've got Ahasuerus. We've already learned that he's not a great upstanding guy. The guy he just promotes and puts in a lot in control of a lot of things is a guy by Haman. And the very fact that somebody won't bow to him makes him hate that person so much that he now hates anybody that's like him. And he won't, you know, I believe if he had enough power at this point, he could have just went and got Mordecai and done something to him. But his hatred was so much that that wasn't good enough. He had to make a plan where he could get them all. This is the climate that Esther finds herself in. Now, I think we read over, we had skipped part of it, but at this point, of course, Esther has kept quiet the fact that she is Jewish. So, Esther's now queen. Mordecai has saved the king's life. Haman's put in charge. Haman now hates Mordecai and all the Jews, and he's going to do something about it. And if you look in verse 8 of chapter 3, "And Haman said unto King Ahasuerus, There is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom, and their laws are diverse from all people, neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore it is not for the king's profit to suffer them. If it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those that that have the charge of the business, to bring it unto the king's treasuries. And the king took his ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedath, the Agite, the Jew's enemy. And the king said unto Haman, The silver is given to thee, the people also, to do with them as it seemeth good to thee. Then were the king's scribes called on the 13th day of the first month, and there was written according to all that Haman had commanded unto the king's lieutenants, and to the governors that were over every province, and to the rulers of every people of every province, according to the writing thereof, and to every people after their language. And the name of the king, Ahasuerus, was it written and sealed with the king's ring. And the letters were sent by post unto all the king's provinces, to destroy, to kill, and to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, even upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar, and to take spoil of them for a prey. The copy of the writing for a commandment to be given unto every province was published unto all people, that they should be ready against that day. And the post went out, being hastened by the king's commandment, and the decree was given in Shushan the palace. And the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Shushan was perplexed." So here he's found his way, he's going to do it. And by the way, it's probably about the dumbest way that you could do it. First off, you let everybody know what you're going to do, which in one hand is scary, right? You now have everybody being commanded to kill you, and this message has went out among all the places, but it's going to happen on X day at X time, and be ready. Right? Now, if you're in this foreign land, potentially you can't just up and leave anytime you want. But now you've got your family and your stuff and you're here, and now this commandment's going out, and all the people that live around you and the people that are in charge of the city you live in, they've now been commanded that on this day they're to go out and find you and kill you. And when all this is done, the king and Haman sit down and have a nice little drink together. So, they've just signed the death warrant of I don't know how many men, women, and children, and they sit down to have a drink. That's what they do at the end of this process. That's who Esther is now queen with. Now if you turn over to chapter 4, when Mordecai perceived all that was done, Mordecai rent his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went out into the midst of the city and cried with a loud and bitter voice, and came even before the king's gate, for none might enter into the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, there was a great mourning among the Jews, and fasting, and weeping, and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So Esther's maids and her chamberlains came and told it her. Then was the queen exceedingly grieved, and she sent raiment to clothe Mordecai, and to take away his sackcloth from him, but he received it not. So Mordecai is in... he's in mourning, he's in sackcloth and ashes. Esther is grieved. She sends him a change of clothes. She wants him not to be in sackcloth and ashes. And then if you come down here, and we'll go to verse 7. It says, "And Mordecai told him of all that had happened unto him, and of the sum of the money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them, and also gave him a copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan, to destroy them, to show it unto Esther, and declare it unto her, and to charge her that she should go in unto the king to make supplication unto him, and to make request before him for her people." So Esther sent word down, take this raiment, get out of the sackcloth and ashes. Mordecai said no. They came back, what's going on? Mordecai sent message up, he sent a copy of the writing, he wanted her to know what had happened. You almost get the idea that maybe because in the preparation or whatever, wherever she was, that she may not have known about this yet. But he made sure she did by the end of this. And he has a request of her. He says, "You need to go in unto the king and you need to make supplication for me, for your people." And Hatach came and told Esther the words of Mordecai. And again, Esther spake unto Hatach and gave him commandment unto Mordecai. "All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king into the inner court, who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days. So she's just received word that Mordecai and all of her people are going to be killed on X date. And Mordecai's request is, you go beg for our lives to the king, is in essence what he's saying. And her response back is, you know, everybody knows that you can't just go in into the king unless he's asked. It's punishable by death. Unless when you get there, he says, okay, and he reaches out his golden scepter. That's the only way, right? Now, Esther's become queen. Ahasuerus loved her, and I'm putting quotes around that. This is the man that just tried to parade his last queen in front of all of his buddies. And when she wouldn't do it, he took away everything she owned, and he kicked her out of the kingdom. That's who Mordecai is asking her to go in and talk to. In verse 12, and it says, "And they told to Mordecai Esther's words. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, Then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" These couple of verses here is where we're going to stop and pause for just a little bit. So we've kind of tried to build up the situation that Esther's in. She has unwillingly been made queen, which you might think is not a bad thing, but again, she's a Jew in a foreign land, now queen to a pagan king who kicked out the last queen because she wouldn't do a vile act. And Esther is being asked to go in front of that king, uninvited. But I absolutely love the way that Mordecai talks about this. The first thing he says is, and I don't know what Esther was thinking, but the first thing he says is, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, you know, Esther, you're queen, you haven't told anybody you're a Jew. Don't think that if this goes on, that you're going to escape. So don't think within yourself that, you know, you're going to escape just because you're in the king's house more than all the rest of the Jews. That's one. Second thing he says, you know, if you hold your peace now, I love this. Mordecai says, if you hold your peace now, he says, I have no doubt that the Lord's going to provide deliverance. I'm here in sackcloth and ashes and I'm mourning, but I have no doubt that the Lord's going to provide deliverance somehow. You can hold your peace, Esther. The Lord will bless us. But if you hold your peace, your family won't be blessed. He says, the Lord's going to provide deliverance. Then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. So he's saying, look, he's saying, you can hold your peace. God's going to provide. You won't be blessed if you hold your peace now. And then he says, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Now there is a question mark at the end of that. I don't know about you, but if Mordecai is trying to encourage Esther and make her feel like it's all going to be okay, he didn't tell her, if you go into the king, I guarantee you the king's not going to have you killed. And I guarantee that if you go into the king, you will be the one that's the means for deliverance for the Jews. He said, who knows? Maybe that's why you're here. Now, we always think about this story and we say, the Lord's going to provide deliverance. And if you just do it, He'll bless you and He's going to bless your people. That's not what Mordecai said. Mordecai said, who knows? Maybe that's why you're here, Esther. He didn't say, go, it's going to be okay. Mordecai had faith that the Lord was going to bless. He knew the Lord provided deliverance. He knew that Esther was in a place where she had to try. He did not know that Esther was going to be the means. I think he had a pretty good idea. But I love this thought of, who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? So as you look around, and there's so many times when we're faced with things that we don't know why we're faced with them, we don't know how we got where we are, how in the world did I get where I'm at, and what in the world is the Lord thinking? Because I'm now in a foreign land. I'm the queen of a pagan king who just kicked the last one out because she wouldn't perform vile acts. What in the world am I doing here? All the way up through this time, you got to believe Esther had no idea why this was happening. We do, right? Uncle Jerry, I thought about you a lot as I studied some of this because I know this is one of your favorite stories. We used to talk about it a lot in Sunday school class. You know, we know the story. Esther just went through this big long thing where she was pulled out of her house and She had to go before some guy she didn't know who you probably really didn't want to be around. She's got to be thinking, why am I here? What is going on? What is the Lord's plan? But, you know, the Lord has a way of knowing not just what's going to happen tomorrow and next week, but a year, 2 years, 5 years, for eternity, right? He sees the big picture that we don't see. Sometimes I think there are some things that we go through now that we will probably never in this life see the result of why we went through that. There's some things we get to see the result. There's some things that we have trials and troubles and we don't understand what's going on. And then there's this time of confusion, and there's this time of needing to accept the Lord and trust that He's going to bless. And then you come out of that time and you can look back on it and you can know exactly why it happened. I don't think everything we go through, we know that all the time. Because there's things that I do that will affect my children, and long after I'm gone, might have been passed on to their kids. And maybe that's what they needed at the time, right? The Lord sees this when we just barely see what's right in front of us. But you find Esther here, and Mordecai is coming back, and he's saying, look, you can hold your peace, but your family won't be blessed. You've been placed, whether you're the deliverance or not, it doesn't matter. You've been placed in a position where you can try to do something about it. And if you don't even try, your family won't be blessed. Your family will be destroyed. God's going to provide deliverance, but your family will be destroyed. And I think he fully believed that that's exactly why Esther was where she was at the time. Okay. So verse 15, then Esther bade them return to Mordecai this answer. Go gather together all of the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so I will go into the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish. That's a pretty... It's so easy to look at this. How do you convey the thoughts and emotions that must be going through that person's mind, right? It's so easy to read this and go, yeah, that's neat. Literally, this young lady came to the place in her life where she wanted to do what was right. And if it meant she was going to die, she was willing to do it. If I perish, I perish. Chapter 5. Verse 1, now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel, stood in the inner court of the king's house, over against the king's house, and the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house, over against the gate of the house. And it was so, when the king saw Esther the queen standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight, and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. Then said the king unto her, what wilt thou, O Queen Esther, and what is thy request? It shall be given thee to the half of the kingdom. So not only did he let her come in, he said, yes, it's okay for you to come talk to me. She didn't even ask anything yet, and he's already given her half the kingdom. You tell me what you want, and as long as it's not more than half the kingdom, it's yours. So she was sitting here afraid to even go in because she knew that if he said no, she was going to die. She not only got let in, but he instantly gave her half the kingdom if that's what she wanted. Verse 4, and Esther answered, if it seem good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day into the banquet that I have prepared for him. Then the king said, cause Haman to make haste, that he may do as Esther hath said. So the king and Haman came to the banquet that Esther had prepared. And the king said unto Esther at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition? It shall be granted thee, and what is thy request? Even to the half of the kingdom it shall be performed. Then Esther answered and said, my petition and my request is this, if I find favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my petition and to perform my request, let the king and Haman come to the banquet that I shall prepare for them. And I'll do tomorrow as the king has said. Then Haman went forth that day joyful and with a glad heart. And when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that stood not up nor moved for him, he was full of indignation against Mordecai. So Esther doesn't have a big request. She says, I want to throw a little banquet. It's going to be a little private affair. Just me, you, and Haman. Nobody else. He offered her half the kingdom and she asked for one banquet. Haman, the proud guy that he is, was thrilled. And as soon as he walked out, he saw Mordecai sitting there and would not bow. And he was again yet filled with indignation. Verse 10, nevertheless, Haman refrained himself. When he came home, he sent and called for his friends and Jerush's wife. And Haman told them of the glory of his riches and the multitude of his children and all the things wherein the king had promoted him, and how he had advanced him above the princes and the servants of the king. And Haman said, moreover, yea, Esther, the queen, did not let no man come in with the king into the banquet that she had prepared but myself. And tomorrow am I invited unto her also with the king. So, first off, he brings all these people in. He says, look at how great I am. I've done this, I've done that. The king's given me this. Look how rich I am. And by the way, I'm the only one, me and me only, I'm the only one that the queen had come in with the king. Verse 13, yet all this availeth me nothing as long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Then said Jerush his wife and all his friends unto him, let the gallows be made of 50 cubits high, and tomorrow speak unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. Then go thou merrily with the king unto the banquet. And the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. So he's so happy, he's got all this stuff, but yet, even in spite of all that I've got, I hate that Mordecai. He's already set these plans up. All those people are going to be destroyed. He already knows that they're all going to be destroyed, but he still has such burning hatred for Mordecai. He's still not happy. And so they say, well, why wait till that day? You've got the power. Just go hanging. Verse 7. So the king and Haman came to the banquet with Esther the queen, and the king said again unto Esther on the second day at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition, Queen Esther, and it shall be granted thee, and what is thy request, and it shall be performed, even to the half of the kingdom. Then Esther the queen answered and said, if I have found favor in thy sight, O king, if it please the king, let my life be given at my petition, and my people at my request. Sorry guys, I skipped chapter 6, so I'm going to... Went too fast. Flipped too many pages. I'll recap chapter 6 real quick. So chapter 6, you find here that the king couldn't sleep. Amazingly, how things start to click in place at just the right time. As Queen Vashti goes out, Queen Esther comes in, Mordecai saves the king's life, nothing's said, Haman comes into power, the Jews are threatened, Mordecai is going to get hung the next day. That night, the king can't sleep. He asks for the people to come read him out of the Chronicles of the Kings. And what does he find? He finds that, oh yeah, my life was threatened, and this guy named Mordecai, he's the one that found it out. He's the one that saved me. About that time, Haman comes into the court, and the king says, have Haman come up here. Haman comes up there, and the king says, hey, you know what? If you got this really cool guy, this guy that you want to just put so much honor on, Haman, I can't even think about how I'm going to show this guy as much honor as I want to do it. What do you think? Now, of course, we know how Haman is. Haman's the kind of guy, he's thinking, well, the king already promoted me. The king's already given me all this stuff. I'm getting my way with the Jews. I'm going to hang Mordecai later today. He's got to be talking about me. You put your royal clothes on him. You put him on the horse. You lead him throughout the city and you make everybody show him honor and respect. And the king says, you're right. I like it. Go do that to Mordecai. You lead the horse. That's what happens in chapter 6. Now again, Mordecai's adopted daughter happens to be the one that gets selected to be queen. Happens. Mordecai happens to uncover a plot to kill the king. And when the Jews are in trouble, and Esther goes before the king, Mordecai is going to be hung. It just happens to be that night that the king can't sleep. And he just happens to have that book read to him. The Lord is in control. This is not something that happened over a period of a couple days. We can read this chapter in about an hour. We can read this book in about an hour. This is not something that happened in a short amount of time. If I remember right earlier in the passage, I believe the preparation time period for Esther to go through to even be taken before the king was about a year. She had 6 months of this preparation and 6 months of that preparation before she could even go to the king. We're not talking about a short amount of time from when this started to when some of this has happened. There's no way she could understand all that was going to happen. But lo and behold, things start to fall into place. And the Lord knew exactly what He was doing. And then we find ourselves here in verse 7, where I'd skipped ahead a little bit. They're in this second banquet. The king again asks what she wants. In verse 4, she says, "For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, and I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage." Then the king Ahasuerus said unto the queen, unto Esther the queen, "Who is he, and where is he, that there's presume in his heart to do so?" Now, Haman's here. Just the three of them. You know that he's got to be getting nervous somewhere along in the course of this conversation. This has got to start sounding familiar to him. My people are going to be destroyed. They've sold. They're going to be... Something's got to be clicking in Haman's head here somewhere along the line. And the king starts to get mad and he says, "Who is it that would presume to do this?" And Esther said, "The adversary and the enemy is the wicked Haman." Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. And the king, arising from the banquet of wine in his wrath, went out of the palace garden, and Haman stood up to make request for his life to Esther the queen, for he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king. Really? Pretty obvious, I'm thinking. The king had just offered to give half the kingdom to the queen. The queen points at him and says, "He's an evil man." The king's so mad he has to walk out of the room. Haman thinks that there's evil coming. Verse 8, "Then the king returned out of the palace garden to the palace of the banquet of wine, and Haman was fallen upon the bed wherein Esther was. Then said the king, 'Will ye force the queen also before me in the house?' And as the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. And Harbonath, one of the chamberlains, said before the king, 'Behold also the gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman had made for Mordecai, who had spoken good for the king, standeth in the house of Haman.' The king said, 'Hang him thereon.' So they hanged Haman on the gallows that had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified." Now, Haman is thinking everything's great. You talk about starting with what looked like a good day, and he's dead by the end of it. But the Lord is in control even when we can't see it, and we don't know why. But suddenly, it starts to make sense. Haman pleads for his cause. The king comes in and misinterprets what he's seeing. The king instantly has him taken out and hung on the very gallows that Mordecai was supposed to be hung on. And we don't have time to necessarily go into all the details other than as you go through chapter 8 and chapter 9, you find that they made another law and they sent that out and they basically said, "Look, all that stuff we said before, now you prepare yourself to defend yourself and you go out and actually kill anybody that was going to do you harm." And I'm paraphrasing for time's sake here. But what you find is that it's completely flipped around. Right? So when they were supposed to go out and be killed, the new commandment flipped all that around. And all the people that had been preparing and all the people that were getting ready to kill all the Jews, it's flipped. And now they are the ones that are in trouble. If you look in verse chapter 10, "And the king Ahasuerus laid a tribute upon the land and upon the isle of the sea, and all the acts of his power and of his might, and the declaration of the greatness of Mordecai, wherein the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? For Mordecai the Jew was next unto the king Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and accepted of the multitude of his brethren, seeking the wealth of his people, and speaking peace to all his seed." So this man that was supposed to be hung by Haman, in the end, he has the right-hand place of the king. In essence, it almost appears that he took Haman's place. Mordecai now had Haman's position. And so as you think about the story, you know, you look around you, you don't always understand all of the things that are going on. But yet, when the Lord places something in front of us, and we know we have the opportunity to do something, we need to do it. We may not understand why we're in this situation. We may not understand why these things are happening, but there is a reason. God's in control, and we need to trust Him. And I would venture a guess that we need to be looking for the things that He wants us to do. Because maybe you've been placed in that for such a time as this. Right? Isn't that what Mordecai told Esther? He said, maybe such a time as this. That's why you're here. That's why you faced what you faced. And I would remember his words of warning too. You can ignore it. You could ignore the opportunity. The Lord's will is going to be done. He'll find somebody else to do it. But Mordecai said Esther's would be destroyed. The very thing that she wanted to protect by not saying anything would be the very thing that they would lose if she didn't do what the Lord had put in front of her to do. So as you look at the situations that you're in and you look at the trials and the troubles, or just sometimes the people you're around. Why am I here? Don't pass up the opportunity the Lord's given you. He's got a reason for the things that He does. And we don't always understand it, but He's got a reason. And sometimes we may not see the answer for years and years and years. And I fully believe that sometimes we may not see the answer in our lifetime. But the Lord's placed it in front of us, and we need to do it. So I hope this has been a blessing and encouragement to you. I thoroughly enjoy the study of Esther. It's just a neat book. I love those couple verses there in the middle where Mordecai talks to her about maybe such a time as this. This is the very reason that you're going through this. So maybe we'll remember that as we go about our lives. All right. Brother Philip, would you come lead us in a song of invitation? We'll go